Meet Me in Istanbul by Pamela Kent, narrated by Jerry Allen for Saga Egmont. Gay stood near the window and watched the people talking and laughing in the crowded room. They looked like any concentration of smart set members one might encounter in any corner of the civilised globe. And if the women had a rather more exotic air than the women of London's Mayfair, or even fashionable Paris, their clothes and their hairstyles were copied slavishly from the West. As for their jewellery, Gay had long ago decided that most Western women, unrelated to a millionaire, would prefer to think of it in the security of bank vaults. But these sinuous creatures, with their oblique glances and their teeth like blanched almonds, positively scintillated with diamonds. And although the occasion was only a well-attended cocktail party in the house of Orhan Bey, the temptation to outdo one another had obviously been well played up to. The men were dark-eyed and exciting, if one found dark-eyed men exciting. One or two of them were young officers on leave from local units, and their uniforms were very smart. They filled the air with the fragrance of Turkish cigarettes, disposed of as many martinis as were offered them, and had an eye for a neatly turned ankle and a brilliantly reddened mouth, in the way of their counterparts in most European capitals. And although Istanbul is no longer a capital, it is a modern city that prides itself on its modernity. Gay watched Orhan Bey, after making himself attentive to a group of elderly ladies, wending amongst the crush until he reached a similar group of elderly men, sitting round a coffee table and drinking heavily sweetened Turkish coffee. As she saw him sink down in the lap of a huge Chesterfield and become one of them, she decided that now was the moment when she might slip outside. At this hour of the evening, her head always ached a little, and outside the nightingales would be singing in a thicket at the corner of one of the big lawns, and it would be cool and sweet-scented, and the murmur of the Sea of Marmara would reach her pleasantly. Under ordinary circumstances, the nearness of the Sea of Marmara would have been a constant delight to her, but as it was, she only thought of it as a means of escape. She had no clear idea what lay on the other side of that sea, and she would have been appalled if she had known that only the vast continent of Asia spread itself between her and the horizons undreamed of. But if it was escape, then it would mean a return to the world of normality. The world she had known, the world of women and girls who toiled for their living, and didn't live in the sumptuous lap of luxury from dawn till dusk, and dusk till dawn. Women and girls who travelled in tube trains and caught buses at 5:30 each evening, and went home to cook themselves meals in bedsitters. She herself had had a bedsitter once, but she couldn't recall exactly what it had looked like, or even where it was. She knew that she had possessed the key to it, and that it had overlooked some sort of a park. Battersea Park? And that the red buses had trundled past constantly. But when she tried to see it more clearly, its furnishings, the number on the front door of the house, painted on a fanlight, behind which a light glowed dimly at night, everything at once became a fog, and her head started to ache, and she felt frightened. "It's no use, my dear child," Orhan Bey would say in his kindly, cultured, sympathetic way. "It's no use trying to force things that are not ready to be forced. In time the mists will clear, but you will have to be patient." Patient? When the days and the weeks were creeping by, she felt as if she was in a trap. A silk-lined trap, but a trap nevertheless. Tonight she had seen Charles Villiers, who had been introduced to her a week ago for the second time, and 10 minutes ago he had slipped as unostentatiously as possible out of this same French window, beside which she was standing, and she felt that she had to find him. If necessary, she would search for him, for he was her own countryman, and surely if she appealed to him, he would help her. She wasn't at all certain how he could help her, but he could listen to her. Without Orhan Bey standing by and interjecting gently that she was a little overwrought, that she wasn't yet fully recovered. She bit her lip as the determination washed over her to make Charles Villiers listen to her, and then she was outside on the coolness of the lawn.